Santa Claus sitting in a sauna by the sea, many majestic modern museums, and fantastic filling food. All this can be yours when you choose Helsinki to host the 2017 World Science Fiction Convention. Where else can you enjoy 17 hours of sunlight while exploring an 18th century island sea fortress? The home of Angry Birds and Linux is calling. Come be a part of the excitement as you enjoy all of this and the World Science Fiction Convention in 2017. Make sure to vote Helsinki in 2017. For more information on how to help Helsinki host the World Science Fiction Convention, please visit www.helsinkiin2017.org.
Danger! The emergency destruct system is now activated.
Cake and grief counseling will be available at the conclusion of the test.
She's alive! Alive!
Maybe you should put some shorts on or something if you want to keep fighting evil today.
Why not just put a stake through her heart?
She's not a vampire.
Well, you'd be surprised how many things that'll kill.
We are now seeing the beginnings of another stage of human evolution.
At last, we can retire and give up this life of crime.
You and your training wheels.
Hailing frequencies are open.
Hello, sweetie.
Commencing countdown. T-5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome, thank you for making it all the way out to this remote location for So You Want to Start a Podcast. We'll start off by doing introductions. I'll ask a few questions for each of the panelists. We'll get to hear each of their perspectives on those, and then we'll try to leave as much time as we can for interaction and questions. So think of those, because it's real lame when we leave 15 minutes for questions and everyone looks at us blankly. I'll start on Clayton Fates. I am the creative director for a dramatic podcast called Our Fair City, which is a post-apocalyptic audio drama. That's my primary involvement, although I have, we're part of a sort of a network in Chicago that does a number of different podcasts of different flavors and styles. That's me. Let's just go down the line.
My name is Jeffrey Adams, and I'm creator-director of a group in International Falls, Minnesota, called the Icebox Radio Theater. And we've been doing basically a drama anthology podcast. I think we're starting season 9 right now. But for the most part, up till now, focused on stories about our particular corner of the world, because High Falls has a certain resonance. People have heard of it because of the weather. All genres, horror, science fiction, whatever.
Cool.
Hi, I'm Sean Duke. I'm probably best known for the Skiffy and Fanti show. Yay! He's also on the show, so that he'll clap for things I say, because, yeah.
Oh, Paul.
So that's what I'm best known for. I also started 2 new podcasts this year. One is called Totally Pretentious, which is a podcast about great movies. We just did Jurassic Park, which was so much fun. And the other one is one that I kind of do regularly on my blog called Sean's Rambles. So, yeah.
Hi, I'm Michael Damian Thomas, and I am the co-editor-in-chief and co-publisher of Uncanny Magazine.
See, fair start.
I am currently working on 3 podcasts. The Hugo Award-winning SF Squeecast, which is recorded here a couple of times with my wife Lynn M. Thomas, Paul Cornell, Elizabeth Baer, Shauna McGuire, and Catherine M. Blunty. That is winding down. My other 2 podcasts are, I just started a new podcast about the TV show Blake 7, and with Scott Lynch, Ellen Miles, and Amala Muttar, that just launched 2 months ago. And that's just us going through episode by episode of the British science fiction show Blake 7 and just screwing around. And then our final, most professional, fancy podcast is with the magazine, because we run an online science fiction fantasy magazine, and we have a monthly podcast along with it that has 1 story read, a poem read, and an interview with the author, and editorial banter.
Michael, what's the name of your Blake 7 podcast for those?
Down and Safe, Paul. Thank you.
And I'm Jeffrey Gardner, and I am the executive producer of Our Fair City, so I'm Clayton's other half on the other end.
So, you're here because you want to start a podcast, presumably. I want to start off by having each of our panelists talk a little bit about what attracted them to podcasting as a medium for expressing themselves, and maybe how they fell into this this business. And what's
same order?
Same order, sure.
Same order. Okay. Well, I actually first heard of podcasting virtually at the beginning of the technology. We're talking early 2000s. We started Icebox in 2004, with the idea of it being broadcast on the radio, because we actually had a relationship with a local station. And although I'd been somewhat aware of the limitations audio drama has on broadcast radio, it became very apparent once you actually started doing it. The number of people who were enthusiastic supporters of what we were trying to do who simply couldn't remember to tune in their radios, because people don't do that anymore. They don't turn on the radio unless it's in the car. And I think it was a BBC story that appeared online about 2004 or 5 about this thing called podcasting. And what's his name? The ex-MTV VJ who's been trying to claim responsibility for inventing
Adam Curry.
Thank you, Adam Curry. And instantly I could see, wow, this is really cool, the idea for audio drama, of being able to have a technology that allowed people to download, stop and start, pause, and basically listen to the story on their time as opposed to on the radio's time. And that's what got me very interested. And then 2004, I think, Apple added the podcast module to iTunes, and things kind of exploded from then on. Was it 5?
I thought it was 4.
And that's what got me interested, was just, you know, knowing what we did, seeing the limitations of doing what we did, that it was originally either radio or selling folks a CD, and just seeing that the format seemed to work really, really well for drama.
Excellent. So I got into podcasting mostly because I'm a science fiction fantasy nut, and where I lived in Santa Cruz, California, they're really the only way you could get any content specific to that was via podcast, because there was no radio. There wasn't, like, you know, the Dr. Demento Hour or something, which would be fun, but we didn't have that. So I listened to things like Adventures in Sci-Fi Publishing, the early days of, you know, Dragon Page, stuff like that, because that was the only thing I could get, where I got interviews with the authors I wanted to read. And I wanted to do podcasting for years, but I didn't want to do it by myself, because it's kind of scary if you've never done anything like that before. So I begged my best friend, and she refused for a number of years. So I did it with another friend, and then he wasn't very good at it and didn't like it. And so he stopped. And it's not fair. He was okay at it. He just didn't like doing it. And then that's how I begged her to come back. And then we started really doing stuff, a lot of stuff together. And it was just a lot easier when you did it with my best friend. And that was, oh gosh, we're 5 years this year, so 2010. So that's how I started that. Yeah. And then just add people in as they come along. You know, if you just hang out with me for a little bit, I'll just eventually make you part of the podcast. Yeah, that's not true, but...
So, yeah, we started roughly the same time you did with Squeakcast. I think it was a little bit later, but not much later.
Pretty close, yeah.
Pretty close. And in that, my wife Lynn and I are both big Doctor Who fans. And when Lynn's book Chicks Dig Time Lords came out, we kind of became attached to the Doctor Who podcast community, which is a very strong, loud kind of... So we had friends. We started to make friends at Radio Free Scarrow and other places, and we sort of did Lynn did basically a podcast tour when the book came out, and we were interviewed a lot of places. And it was like, wow, these podcast things are kind of fun. And then Lynn was talking with a bunch of other science fiction professionals, and it was a time when there was a lot of negativity about in the SF community at that point, which is luckily fixed now. But they were kind of on Twitter, and they were like, hey, we should do a thing. Let's just talk about positive things. We'll just bring things that we love about science fiction, just squee about them. And that's how the SF Squeecast was born. And I was the behind-the-scenes, one of the basic producers with Lynn while we were putting it together. And that thing just kind of made, because of the talent, snowballed. And then they won the Hugo Award, the first Fancast Hugo Award. And then kind of at that point, we realized, oh, I guess we're podcasters now. And... you know, then Lynn got into the Verity podcast, the Doctor Who podcast, and all this other stuff. And we then were working at Apex magazine, where we then launched the first, because other magazines had started to realize, hey, this reading stories for audio thing is actually popular. So we launched that there, and then, you know, since we've been at Uncanny, it's like with each project, we try to learn from all the numerous mistakes we made on the last project. And, you know, like, for instance, audio quality matters to people. Who knew? But, you know, so that now that we're doing the Uncanny podcast, it's like a team of 6 or 7 people who are all, which I'm sure many of you have similar teams at this point.
So we started Our Fair City in around 2011. And for a lot of us on the team, we are similarly a very large team. What, 60, 70 people working on the show at this point?
Bit more than mine, then.
You win.
We're doing a slightly different thing. But a lot of us are coming from the very rich Chicago theater scene, which is wonderful, and it's great, and it's really fun to put on these live shows that are very expensive, and that... You know, even if you're selling out every show, you're only getting a certain number of people in front of your art. And I'm sure you folks who are local also know this, but the Midwest gets cold in the winter, and it's not fun to go outside. And so, like, making art that people had to travel for during the January, February thing just felt kind of cruel. And so we found this way to huddle up. And I've noticed, I think a lot of audio drama gets made in places that are very cold or have inclement weather. Halifax, Minneapolis, Chicago. I wonder if there's like an Omaha audio drama scene. Anyway, we wanted to make art that was like easy to access for everyone. If you've got an internet connection, or if your library has an internet connection, or anything like that, it's very easy to just grab. I think podcasting also, just the coolest thing about it is, if I can segue into this,
sure.
It's just it's a really intimate, connected way to do storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
There's not the distance of watching it on the screen or watching someone on stage, which have huge assets, but if it's right in your ear, obviously, I think everyone in the podcast world has been taking a long look at Night Vale and being like, why does this work so well? I mean, it's that voice that you really connect to right there in your head and kind of becoming your own personal narration. And that's a really cool way to tell stories and a really cool way to get your audience like participating in your storytelling. So that's why we do it right now.
You all touched on a lot of interesting points, and it's great that we have some dramatic podcasts, some fan podcasts. There are a lot of different styles out there.
Mm-hmm.
Something that's interesting is that I think we all got started some years ago now, right? And for a number of different reasons, podcasting has really blown up.
Yes.
And so what I'll ask each of the panelists in turn is, in this very crowded field, where there are a lot more podcasts now than there were 4 or 5 years ago, what is it that makes your podcast stand out? How do you find your niche audience and the people that really want to listen to you? And how do you... I had another podcaster a month ago at the Lit Fest in Chicago, the Book Fest, say that, you know, when he meets podcasters that he's listened to, he feels like he already knows them. He wants to like hang out
yes.
and have a beer with them. They don't know who the hell he is, right?
Yeah.
But it's because you spent this intimate time. How do you start to form that connection and really stand out among the crowd?
I'd also maybe expand it to other podcasts that we love. Why they stand out?
Yeah, sure.
And
then why don't we mix it up and do something crazy in reverse order here?
Reverse.
Ooh,
thank you.
yes.
So
you can pass.
No. I'd love to talk about this.
All right.
That's why I'm on a podcast. No, seriously, I think the thing that makes a podcast stand out to me is it's so clear when someone has done their homework.
Mm-hmm.
There are so many podcasts, and I don't want to speak too negatively. I want to keep it in the positive. But there are so many podcasts that are 4 hours of people chatting, and that's great. But that's not what I'm looking for. I love a 5-minute podcast or a 20-minute podcast where people have clearly like prepped for it and. They know what they're going to say, and spontaneous interaction and conversation can happen, but then they've gone back and they've edited,
mm-hmm.
and they don't still have, you know, those pauses and... times. All of that stuff. The cool thing about being on a podcast is you have the tools. It doesn't have to be live.
Mm-hmm.
You can take that out. You can make it zippy. I I think that's so important. And so that's what I look for. It's not just clear audio. It's people who have taken the time to really clean it up and keep it tight and have something very specific. I think generalist podcasts, if you're doing it really well, that's awesome. But I like to go to a podcast. My favorite new, like, non-narrative podcast is Rachel and Miles Explain the X-Men. Have you ever heard of
that? Oh, yeah.
Oh, God, I love it. And it's got that feeling. Like, I feel like these are, like, my two best friends, and I've never met them. But I'd love to. But they know what they're going to say. They're clean. They very clearly edited and cut out all the empty space. So it feels like it's worth my time. So that's what I look for.
Yeah, I think that we're part of the development of it is realizing what people really do want out of podcasts compared to, like, 10 years ago, I guess, when people were just throwing anything at the wall. Because in some ways, it's very simple to make a podcast. It's not that simple to make it well. And you have to know what is your vision, what do you want, and then you need to have the talent. You need to have people have things to say and say them engaging. What do you mean? That's the thing. If it works well, these have become your fake friends in your lonely house. And you can listen to them and go, I love you, fake friend. I agree about that thing. Tell me again. But there should be wit and verb. And you want that because, and finally, and for us, this was our big learning curve, is the audio editing. It's having good, clean audio and to get back to you, taking out all those ums and uhs and digressions and stuff and making it a tight, because this is a show. I mean, even if it feels like you've just slipped into a conversation, it's still, you have it. It should feel that way, but there's going to be a certain amount of artifice to it because it has to flow correctly. And if it doesn't flow correctly, it's going to bounce you out. Mm-hmm. And then once you have those things, you have your perfect niche, you have your good cast, you have your good audio editing and your equipment and everything, then it's about getting the word out to the people, which is getting on social media, other places, and
that's tough.
That's the hardest part. I mean, that may be the hardest part, is what's the hook? How can I get to the people who want to engage in this? Because it is a, if you put into Apple right now, I want science fiction in my podcast. Yeah.
Dozens of shows. Yeah. Well, I'll add to the audio quality thing. So, this day and age, there are not many good reasons someone will listen to a podcast whose audio is not at least reasonable.
Yeah.
I mean, people don't necessarily need, like, it doesn't have to be perfect. It doesn't have to sound like we did it in, like, a studio with thousands of dollars of equipment. But if you can't hear people very well, or there's lots of weird background noise, like, I almost deleted a podcast off of my thing just the other day because there was somebody fumbling around in the background, banging things. I'm like, why didn't you mute that out? You have two tracks of audio. I know you do. So you can go through and mute this. Mm-hmm. It doesn't even need to be there. And that drives me nuts. The thing that I hate, too, is you get an audio podcast and people won't level the audio. Mm-hmm. And since I listen to podcasts primarily either when I'm on public transport or in my car, that means if the audio is not leveled, I have to turn the volume really high, which means one person's screaming at me and one person's normal. And that's no good because it's just loud and really obnoxious. Those are easy things to fix, but people won't put up with that stuff for very long unless you're offering something really, really unique. So the Children of Tendu podcast, I don't remember the names, but they're two screenwriters who are super geeky writers. The guy who did The Middleman is on there.
Javier Rio Marswash and...
I forget the other guy's name. He's on Agent Carter right now.
Yeah. Jose Molina.
Thank you. Their podcast is great, but they've done podcasts where they have recorded in a car and they haven't really taken out all of the background noise. But I will put up with that because what they're offering is so unique, right? There's no one else offering what they're offering. But as soon as someone else does it and does it better, right, I would drop them. Like, well, maybe I wouldn't because it's them, but that's a different issue.
It's possible when Javi was a guest on the SF Squeakcast, he recorded outside while yelling into his iPad.
Yeah, but people will put up with that if it's a guest they really want to hear from,
yes, yeah,
or if it's content that is really, really unique. But if you're doing, like, as you said right at the end, right, a general podcast, like if we're just doing a podcast about all the stuff we love about sci-fi, right, if the audio is not good, right, if there's people banging, if, just to pick on my friend Paul, if his ancient 19th century keyboard is, right, if that's not gone, people will drop you.
Oh, the typing.
Yeah, well, I get rid of it.
Before
right?
we go too far, you had a question.
Just to add to that, I think it definitely people will leave if the audio quality isn't there, unless it's excellent content.
Mm-hmm.
But if you have the excellent content, why not go the extra mile to make the good audio, and then it's going to exponentially kind of add to what you're offering?
I can probably answer that better because of the people I work with. Okay, so like the SF Squeecast, especially my wife, the Doctor Who podcast community is very competitive, and they're all audiophile geeks who are like always like, this is the right equipment, and have you seen this in this program? So like, for instance, when Lynn does Verity or I do Down and Safe, we're recording all of our tracks separately on Audacity. We have at the very least a Snowball mic and a good room, and there's all these, we have all these things to do, and then it's all edited together and stuff. But we want to be doing this, but it's an investment of time. It is a lot of time, it's a lot of effort. With Squeecast, these were very busy writers who we could barely get everyone together. And for them, doing all the extra steps of recording their own audio, we just recorded the Skype call on that one. Because they just were like, I can't do all the things, and I've got to get this manuscript done, and I'm over here, and I've just made 40 minutes. And, that's the thing, you put a mic in front of Sean McGuire, magic's going to happen. And you just kind of... if the audio is a little off and her cats are on her keyboards and things are happening, it's just part of it, because Seanan just doesn't have the time to stop and brain space to do the, and now I'm going to record my own track and upload it and all these other things.
Yeah, and some of the stuff that we've done in the past where we've had like an author on who, they don't have great equipment. They've got like whatever mic has been lying around, right, that they bought like 20 years ago or something, not that long, but... So there are lots of limitations, mm-hmm. and it's kind of like if I'm doing an author interview, I can't be like, go buy this $50 mic and get this fancy piece of software.
Yes.
And even some cases, like with a bunch of fans, like I'm a PhD student, so I make like $3 a year. Mm-hmm. I can't afford to go buy like, expensive mics and mixers and those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. So I have to make do with the equipment I've got. Luckily, my equipment's not too terrible for how much I paid for it. It's actually pretty good. I'm surprised at the audio quality that I get out of it. But that's another issue is mm-hmm. money, and there's like learning equipment. Mm-hmm. Like, Audacity is lovely program.
Thank you, Audacity. Yeah.
Yeah, so there's like lots of things like that. But for the most part, you gotta provide content, because they won't put up with like, I drop podcasts like regularly. As soon as it becomes like if this podcast I'm listening to, if mm-hmm. I get another episode where there's in the background, gone. I just delete it straight off because I'm
so
done.
Let's get Jeff's answer on how to make your podcast stand out, and then since we're kind of talking all around it, let's do a brief conversation about hardware and audio quality.
Okay,
it sounds like we're,
good Lord, that was the question. How to make your
how do you make your podcast stand out in an increasingly crowded field?
Well,
great audio quality. It sounds like
great audio quality. I'm listening to this. I'm really bringing into focus how maybe having done this for over a decade, kind of approaching it from a different point of view, because when we started, what a podcast was would have been just the technology. In other words, it hadn't emerged yet as mm-hmm. a media entity. There wasn't this idea. You say podcast now, I think most people have at least a notion of Marc Maron in his garage. Okay, we kind of, even if they don't own an iPhone, they understand that. When we started at iSpots, it was literally looking, this is what we do. We do audio drama, which was not fundamentally different than radio drama from 80 years ago. Mm-hmm. And, ooh, look, this new technology, this new platform that we can get our stuff in front of people. And over the years, unfortunately, my listening habits are horrible. I only listen to one or two new podcasts, and some of them are really not very good technically. Schlock Treatment is a favorite of mine because I like the guys.
Right.
There are four guys in New York City who have tremendous rapport, but the technical quality is not good. But I'm willing to forgive it because they're genuinely funny and the subject is one I'm interested in. As far as Icebox goes, right away, the field got so crowded so fast. Once iTunes opened up, there were so many podcasts so rapidly. And you go to the top 10 list on the actual iTunes window. And it was always professional broadcasters in the first 10 until Night Vale kind of showed up. And so it was easy for me personally anyway to say, okay, we're going to do what we do. Thank God we're in Minnesota because we can get funding because we went for the nonprofit thing, and just not worry about that so much. at least initially. The big issue I deal with working in a very, very small town is developing talent. I don't have a lot of really great actors right out of the gate. You don't deal with a lot of egos way up north. You deal with a lot of shyness and a lot of bringing people out. So as long as, you know, it could keep the lights on, as long as we could keep making shows and I could keep writing them, I was very happy to sort of not worry so much about the audience until recently when we started looking, okay, how do we develop the audience? And that's led to advertising for the first time, for example. We're doing Facebook ads and Google ads and other things like that. And actually this fall, reworking the entire show into something it hasn't been before. I think that that would be the general rule of thumb to make it stand out. What can you bring to the audience that they are interested in? And how is that different than all the other stuff? And I think there's the technical stuff is a very, very good point. If you're doing this moderately well, like to broadcast radio standards, and there's no group of more anal retentive folks than in broadcast radio. If you can do that, you're probably going to stand out if you've got some level of rapport between the people. I mean, you're absolutely right about podcast, especially in audio in general, being this extremely intimate medium. For fun, about 5 years ago, I started doing a information podcast, separate feed from Icebox Radio called The CRISPR. It was just, it's basically me talking for 10 to 15 minutes every week. I get more responses from that than I do from the regular shows. People really like that. I've worked at a local radio station for about 8 years now. So I can sit and, you know, make a 10 minute off the cuff sounding very fresh, but not ponderous talk about something. People actually, I don't want to say they like it. I'd like to think they don't like it better than the audio drama, but they do enjoy hearing it. Quiet you. And I don't think I wrapped the question.
I think you did good.
Can I
jump in with like one last kind of distilling thought?
Must you?
I must. Yes. I mean, the thing that I feel like a lot of us have been kind of talking around, but has always been my guiding principle, and this sounds really bitter and cynical, but I think the thing to watch for, and that I often hear in podcasts, is it should be more fun for the listener to listen than it is for you to make. And like that sounds bitter, but like we're not like if you want to make a podcast and have fun making a podcast, awesome. If you want people to listen to your podcast, you should be more focused on the listener's experience than your experience making it.
Yeah, it turns out it's work.
Yeah, it takes we figured out it takes between 8 and 10 hours per finished minute of Our Fair City. Now we're doing audio drama, so that's
very different.
Right?
Yeah,
and that's spread over a lot of people, but it's between 8 and 10 hours per minute, and we're doing 20-minute episodes every other week when we're releasing. So it's a lot of work. But if you want people to listen, it should be fun to listen.
Yeah, and
when you told me that on Facebook, I so wanted to not believe you.
Yeah.
You see now, though, right?
Yeah, so like audio drama, obviously, like you get the audio quality really needs to be good because nobody's going to listen to an audio drama where like everybody sounds like they're recording in different planets. Yeah. But for stuff that's discussion-based, like I don't want to give the impression it's a ton of work. For each roughly hour to hour and a half episode, I spend about 3 to 4 hours editing.
Yeah, it's far.
Right, that's roughly it. It's not actually hard. It's oftentimes tedious. But most of the things that drive me nuts about podcasts that don't have good audio quality is that the things that they suck at are things that don't even take time. Mm-hmm. Leveling your audio is like you drag a file into a program and then you leave it alone. That's all it takes.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about this. I want to talk about the hardware that you need. Mm-hmm. And this is, you know, if I'm starting with nothing, I got a blank slate, I think podcasts are cool, and I want to start talking with me and a friend or me and a couple of friends. What is the bare minimum that I need in terms of hardware to get into the game? Let's just run down, like, your number one purchase. It can be a brand or it can be, you know, a broad category of, like, a piece of equipment. And like, what should I budget for that? And we'll just go down the line this way.
Okay.
if you had to buy just one thing, it'd be a Zoom H2.
And what's a Zoom H2?
Zoom H2, and there's not one here. It's a portable recorder similar to the Tascam that my cohort is using. The thing I like about the Zoom H2 is it is a portable recorder, which can also double as a USB microphone. It's also a solid state. field recorder. So for drama, we do a lot of, you know, if we need sound effects in the field, we need a street corner.
H4, but...
H4? Okay, fantastic.
I think that
people want to see.
The only difference, I think the H4 has better mics.
Yeah.
And you have a built-in speaker?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's a fun piece of tech.
They are. They're tremendously fun. Does that run on two AA's as well?
Two AA's.
Two AA's.
Though if you're running mic, it's got XLRs off, so you can run nicer mics off of it, but plug it in for God's sake if you're plugging it, if you're running XLR that draws Phantom, because they will drain those batteries.
Oh, good
in
Lord,
seconds.
It's got 48 volt Phantom? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you want power, but this, in terms of just adaptability,
yes.
These portable recorders we have now are wonderful. And
I absolutely agree. These are super versatile. You can take them with you, and it can, you know, effectively serve as like your preamp. You know, by putting a couple of extra mics in, you can get multi-channel audio through this thing into a computer, which is great. What are you going to spend on one of these?
Well, the H2 I think is about 200 now.
Yeah.
What about the H4?
When I got it, it was on sale for 200. So
yeah,
that's about right.
Okay, and so you know, with this, you're going to plug this into a computer. And, like, don't get bogged down. If you don't know microphones, these don't require phantom power. They're dynamic. Condenser microphones require a power input into the mic, which is a different... It doesn't matter. You know, get one of these, plug it into your computer. It's pretty much plug and play. Now, let's say we record. What do we need for a digital...
Well, I was going to...
Oh, yeah.
Most of the podcasters I know, we're in different places. We actually use Blue Snowballs. That is our mic of choice.
And those are like, it's like a $100 mic, right?
50 to 100. The Yeti, which is the slightly better one, is closer to 100. But Blue Snowball head used to be 100. It's down to about 50 now. You can get it anywhere. It has more than acceptable audio quality. It plugs into your laptop. You know, as long as you have a USB, you know, and then you can use your program of choice for recording. But Blue Snowball, I think that is the easiest to say. If you only have X amount of dollars, that is the cheapest, best mic you can get.
I've used those on other people's podcasts before. They have like an area pickup, right? So you can be more than one person into that one microphone.
Yeah, they have multiple settings, so it can be focused, or you can open it up and get the area.
Terrific.
Yeah.
Great. So the Audacity is one that's come up, and it's one that I'm familiar with. Audacity is a free digital audio workstation, which means that, you know, because it's free, it's pretty ugly. It's not as intuitive or as powerful as some of the professional programs, but it's also way, way cheaper. The professional programs are very, very expensive.
Presonus, actually, for Studio One, has a free version.
Yes, that's right.
It doesn't allow all of the features, but, that's nice if you have people doing editing work remotely as well.
Building on that, I mean, the thing I would say to purchase is download Audacity and then buy yourself 3 days off of work.
Yes.
And spend 24 hours over 3 days just recording yourself and then editing and figuring out what all of those settings do, compressors, and just, like, keep yourself with an internet connection and, like, look up what is a compressor, what is hard limiting, what are the different kinds of noise removal, and just give yourself that time to practice it and learn it. And that really learning all the small things that you're relatively unpowered with but still very, very useful interface can do is absolutely worth it.
Yeah, and there's actually a great podcast called The Audacity to Podcast, and I think it's just that.com. Where the only program he uses is Audacity, and he's got like 200-something episodes where he goes through all kinds of stuff. And I really recommend that because he has video where he shows you what he's doing. He also just has the audio so you can like listen to it when you're wandering around or whatever.
That's awesome.
But it goes through everything, like compression. It talks about the differences between LAME, etc., all of that kind of stuff. So I do really recommend that, especially if you don't know how to use Audacity. That said, Audacity, I mean, it's not quite intuitive, but for like a lot of basic editing stuff, it's really easy. It just takes like a little bit of time to kind of figure it out. And once you figure it out, it's just like clicking the delete button.
I was going to say one comment before we get to the question, and then also shill for another program that I've been telling everybody about. If you have a Mac for years, we got by, and this is especially if you're doing multi-track, several different actors in a music and a sound effects track. Mm-hmm. Go ahead, and if you have a Mac, use Audacity to record and then GarageBand to edit, and kind of use them as a suite. It works extremely good. We did that until 2 years ago when my StumbleUpon gave me a wonderful gift called Reaper.
Mm-hmm.
I'd never heard of Reaper before. I'm absolutely in love with this program. It is, for a private license, $80. but save your Christmas money from grandma, and that's, you know, that's not that big a deal when you think about it. I love this program because it has virtually every feature that we need. GarageBand's big problem for me is that you can't apply effects to a single block of audio. You can't cut off a chunk. And we do this in drama all the time. Someone's supposed to be on the phone, okay, so they need to sound like they're on the phone. In GarageBand, you have to do a separate track, but in Reaper, you can just highlight the single chunk and make it sound that way. Reaper, $80, and if before that, you can get by, especially with a Mac, with GarageBand and Audacity, very, very well. Even though using Reaper, I still am opening Audacity every day to do something, because it's just easier in there.
So for $50 or $100, you get yourself a microphone. You get either a free or a relatively inexpensive digital workstation. Do any of you, we've talked a little bit about background sounds and you know, room noise. Where do you want to record?
Well, where do I want to record versus where do I actually record? Because I would love to record in like a soundproof box, but I'm not that rich.
Sure.
So
is it something that you don't worry about? You record wherever you can set up your laptop, or do you do any room treatment?
Well, my room, luckily, unless there's a thunderstorm in Florida, the acoustics are reasonable, where I don't have to do a lot of, like, I just cut out the noise in Audacity using the noise effect, the noise, whatever that damn effect is called. Noise removal. There you go, that thing. Yeah, that's there's that thing.
Noise removal.
Noise removal.
Talk about noise removal.
Yeah, so I just recorded my room. I'm lucky that I don't get a lot of noise, and my laptop doesn't make a lot of noise. But some people, like, we'll have people on podcasts where there's a lot of background noise. So ideally, you want to be somewhere quiet, not a bathroom because those are cavernous, but somewhere that you have limited noise, not underneath an AC unit.
Yes.
Any kind of blowing air. If you have fans in your room and you're, like, using that little, don't turn it off because it'll catch on the mics.
And fan noise is really broad spectrum. It's really hard to get with a noise removal tool.
Yeah, you can only get background noise out so much before the audio starts becoming a little robot-y. If that's what you want to sound like a Cylon, go for it. Mm-hmm. But not great.
You don't?
Unless,
unless that is your podcast. Yeah.
Which kind of
your
podcast?
The new ones.
The new ones?
The new ones.
Kind of sound like one now.
You can also build, you can find these and you can build them. There are things called whisper boxes, which are neat, which is just all audio, you know, just the kind of a noise suppression box you put over your mic, and then
the simplest way to hack one together that I've seen is you get one of those canvas cube like storage boxes from Target and some egg carton foam, and you line the inside, and you kind of put that behind your microphone and around it. It cuts down on background noise. Okay, so we've got our equipment, we've got our editing software.
I remember you talking about doing remote things with Skype. How do you go about recording that audio?
Sure, they record it therein.
Yeah, I mean, there's two ways to do it, the bad way and the good way. and we do it for both podcasts. Pretty much every podcast we have, everyone's all over the world. And so, yeah, the Skype, you can record a Skype call, but then you're getting the audio quality of a Skype call.
Right, and that's because you record your end, which just records it straight, and then it puts everyone else on one channel.
Right. So, you do your best, but it's getting the sound great. The best way is everyone records their own audio track, as was just said. Yeah. And then you can just piece it together. With many of our podcasts, what we also do is we kind of do both for backups, just to be on the safe side if something breaks.
Skype quality is getting really close. I mean, I've recorded as placeholder audio now, and I've been tempted before, do I really need to drop this in? Because it's been getting better and better. There's fewer cutouts.
Yeah. Yeah, it is getting better, and it's been more stable the last year. It feels like we're getting less drop calls unless someone's calling in from like North Dakota,
which is my problem. Yeah. Like I'm down in Safe, we've got one person in rural Wisconsin with bad internet. The other one's in rural Canada with bad internet, and the other one's in rural Scotland with bad internet. So the Skype call itself is just all over the place.
Yeah, so you can use, like, I use for Windows MP3 Skype Recorder if I'm recording the Skype call. That's free. There's Mac versions, or just Audacity, record straight into Audacity, or both. You can do whatever works.
Okay, so let's say we got our technical side down. We've talked a little bit about preparing and finding interesting guests, and really finding your niche audience. Jeff, you mentioned Google and Facebook ads, so let's talk about maybe the hardest, maybe the least fun. I don't know, for me anyway, the least fun part of you know, producing the podcast is the promotional side, is how do you find a listenership? Mm-hmm. So, you know, what are your strategies for doing that, for getting your name out there?
Oh, me, Jeff?
Sure, why not?
All right. You can go to science fiction conventions and talk on panels. Actually, no, seriously, Convergence, we see a huge bump in our listenership every time we come to Convergence, and that's why we're here. We also enjoy it, but like it's we, you know, we always jump up in, you know, by thousands of listeners, which is awesome. I think it's not letting it be a solitary thing that you do in your home is a big thing. Like go to conventions and meet people and get yourself out there. We find as often as we can non like audio drama specific things. We went to the Printers Row Lit Fest in Chicago. Because we're drama, we, you know, go and participate in the fringe festivals and stuff like that. And by making it getting outside of just being on the internet, we found we have a lot of luck with generating new audiences. I think having an authentic and like singular voice on your social media is really important, and that's something that we've just hired a community manager who runs all of our social media, and it's great. And she's much better than the various people who used to manage those spheres, myself included. She's much better than I am. And so that can be, you know, find someone who knows what they're doing and either have them do it for you or get them to tell you what to do. I can't give you specific advice because I don't know. I'm not great at it, but like that's kind of been our guiding principle for HeartLife, the company that produces Our Fair City. If we find a task that we don't know how to do, we figure out who's really good at it and then convince them to do it for us by hook or by crook. So yeah, find friends who are experts at things and have them do it.
Well, I can, but it's, I mean, our way is cheating, so it's hard to give advice. First become notable in the science fiction industry and then have your notable friends join you. That's pretty much how we did it. So it's like, well, yes, of course you should have Paul Cornell be on your podcast with you. Then people know about it. You know, sure. That's a weird, you know. In our case, that's how we did it, because, you know, my wife, Lynn, was already a well-known editor of stuff, and then everyone we work with, and most of our podcasts come from these communities where everyone has an established fandom of some sort. So then when we do a podcast together, we kind of become like a Voltron of personalities and we all bring our own little group of fans, and many of them are overlapping anyway. And then we also then try to have, on top of that, the one unique social media voice, so all of us will promote the podcast in our own separate ways, because there'll be usually 4 to 6 of us, depending on which podcast we're talking about. And then on top of it, we'll have our own, you know, here's our Facebook feed, here's our Tumblr. And with the, you know, with the magazine, that, you know, it's embedded in the magazine itself. So in the magazine, you know, it'll say, here's our podcast, this is the story being read by this professional reader, and this is the poem by this read by this professional reader. So we get that out through all the same channels that we do for promoting the magazine. It's just kind of here's the adjacent magazine to our magazine.
And I think writing coattails is absolutely not cheating or a bad idea. It's kind of exciting that I finally get to talk about this, but if you're following Our Fair City's social media, we just announced that a certain Welcome to Night Vale's Cecil Alden is going to be on the show.
Which one?
Well, that's a very good question. No, he's going to be on our show in playing a character in the 6th season. Mm. And let me tell you, our download numbers look very different yesterday, as does the Tumblr tag Our Fair City. It is no longer just travel writers talking about Scotland. And that is super exciting. And that's like a very legitimate way of getting there. If you have good content, like people who are famous will want to do stuff with you.
I think it's terrific if you have a leg up or if you already have connections. But I if you are just getting started, I think you'll be surprised. You know, if you go to conventions or if you go to places where you Ravel goes with authors and with notable people within the community or the fan base that you're mm-hmm. that you're working within, you know, people will say yes. You might be yeah. surprised at who's willing to join you as a guest.
Yeah, and, yeah. Oh, well, I would just say that I did not have any of that fancy leg ups. I started, and I think our first downloads were like 10. And so lots of things like social media helps. Mm-hmm. If you do can go to conventions, you know, talking to people, if you're doing interviews, for example, you know, you meet an author and you have a conversation and then say, hey, can I interview you? We interviewed Tim Stanley Robinson because I met him at an academic event. And I was like, can I interview you? And he's like, yes. And then I emailed him and he actually responded and it was wonderful. So that's the kind of, but it is really difficult because if you don't already have a large following, I mean, you're sort of like screaming into a void because there are something like 300,000 podcasts on iTunes. Mm-hmm. And how do you get people to pay attention to that? A lot of that is just perseverance. If you are a nobody and you're not offering like the most amazing, crazy thing ever, you know, like you're going to be in space and you're going to record podcasts from, you know, ISS. I almost said ISIS. That's horrible.
That's a very different podcast.
And yet that would get high download numbers, right? Yeah, recording podcasts from within ISIS. Yeah, that would work. But if not, it's about perseverance and just focusing on making the content good and just, you know, doing social media, talking to people, getting guests on when you can, that kind of thing. I mean, I've actually looked at our download numbers to see the trajectory, to see if we've actually grown, and I can actually trace it from our beginning to our end. Mm-hmm. We've been steadily growing ever since we started.
Libsyn has a nice little graph function if you pay for yeah. the stats. If,
you know, that's maybe the other piece of software we didn't talk about. Yeah, Libsyn is the same service yeah. we use. It's a podcasting service that creates the podcast feed that people can subscribe to and also feeds you back metrics about that.
Yeah. Sure.
Super useful.
And they have the nicest technical support of mm-hmm. any service I have ever used. And I talk to them a lot because I break the podcast feed all the time. And they're wonderful. So I don't get to tell them that enough. Yeah. So at least I can tell you guys.
Yeah. And that is a good, the hosting and company you go with, because that's another expense that we didn't talk about, because there is some monthly expense usually for that, depending on what you're doing, how much it is. And
$8 to $40 a month.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Which for some people, you know, that's still a lot. But, yeah. but you know, that is very, it is a useful thing to make, because there are ways to be free, mm-hmm. like our Sweetcast, because we were doing it on the free, we were hosting, you know, Internet Archive is what.
Yeah, archive.org.
Archive.org. Yeah. That's really good. Which actually has been very stable. It's an extremely, extremely stable for us. Amazingly so. Yeah. Yeah, there were episodes like when we had George R. Martin on Squeakcast. That was one of those days. You know.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it broke the website, but didn't break Internet Archive. So we could at least.
Yeah, they're pretty good, and I think they're stable because like that place, there's everything under the sun. Like I found weird stuff on there.
On the internet.
No, on the internet, on archive.org.
But that being said, I prefer, now that we can, you know, on the other podcast, pay for Libsyn, just because there's all these other cool things.
Metrics right, awesome. Stats and metrics, yeah. Because you don't get that, all you get is raw download numbers in Archive, and I don't know how well that picks up the download numbers from things like iTunes or podcatchers.
They claim it does, but I don't think so.
I don't think it does, because I know our numbers are higher than what archive.org tells me, mm-hmm. Because of the number of subscribers I have, and because I know that I can look at the numbers and add iTunes, and you can add the numbers, and you go, that's not right. So,
hello.
Yeah.
No, it's okay.
Aren't we all women?
We haven't actually come to you at all about how to make people listen.
Oh, okay. How to make
people listen. We've been talking.
It's an interesting way of putting it. How to make people listen.
How?
Blackmail works?
Blackmail, no. Yeah.
Well, again, if I feel to some extent we're approaching this differently because we knew what we wanted to do before we even started a podcast, and it was more how do you get people interested in what we're doing? And as I say, we've been experimenting a little bit with, you know, for pay advertising. And the biggest positive of that, I feel, is that it sort of got us focused a little more on content, strangely, because you start getting these numbers, and we started putting real time into, say, like the Google ads. Because we're a nonprofit, we have access to what they call the Google Grants Program, which gives you a certain number of Google ads per month with some limitations. And we saw like the visits, the analytic visits jump, you know, from very low numbers. We're talking monthly, it would be in the 700 to 800 visits range, up just at a zero. Suddenly they're going 7,000 a month, which is probably still fairly modest. But brought me into focus that, wow, you know, people are coming to the website a lot, and they're staying for, on average, something like 45 seconds. Why are they not doing, why are they not staying longer? And that's brought things back around to content again. Mm-hmm. So even though we had the resources to buy some ads and like that, I found that, okay, we printed the ads, we got more listeners, sort of, the Libsyn numbers didn't really change that much, and it brought us back around to content. It always seems to come back to content. Mm-hmm. You can't make people listen, especially in this environment when there are so many choices all the time. I like to think of social media as a do-it-yourself network. You build one person at a time. The difficult thing about social media is, of course, it's supposed to be intensely personal, and I got into it early enough that now my personal life and professional life are mixed together, and I just sort of have to deal with that.
Yeah.
That I have a whole bunch of Facebook friends. I've got no idea who these people are. But that's how it works. They want to friend me, I friend them back, or they want to follow me on Twitter, I turn around and follow them on Twitter, and believe me, that's a pain in the ass because there's all kinds of stuff on my Twitter feed that I don't care about. But one person at a time. The idea of a network goes back to broadcast, where there was automatically X millions of people connected to their radios and later their televisions. And all you had to do was get through the front door of the producer to get access to that audience. We have a free network now, and that's nothing to be sneezed at. That's an incredible tool, but you got to build it yourself, one little thread at a time. I don't believe there's any form of advertising that really knocks it out of the park the way it used to. We just have too much advertising.
Well, and no advertising that will make up for not having good content.
No.
And the other thing,
you'll get into the site, and then they'll look around and spend 45 seconds and move on.
The other thing I just thought of, which is also important for building your audience, is having a consistent release date, time, function.
Hard.
Yeah. Make sure if you are a weekly podcast, it is dropping weekly. It is, or monthly. It's dropping monthly. And people have an idea of this is the time and place where it is going to be coming. If you are all over the place, you lose people.
Yeah, and just a real quick thing is that this has to be said, that you should not start a podcast because you want to get lots of people listening or you want to make money, because our people make tons of money. Like the guys who do Sword and Laser, they make like, I don't know, they're $1,100 an episode or some craziness right now. So they make quite a bit of money on that podcast, but they didn't start there. They started because they just want to start a book club and talk about it on audio. Mm-hmm. So you should do it because you want to do it. That's something that you really want to do. So if it's just you and your friends hanging out in a garage recording, that's okay, right? As long as you're having fun, because the second you stop having fun, it's going to show. It really does. I mean, there have been some episodes we've released where it's clear like one of us isn't having a good time. And it becomes really obvious in the tone. It just comes through even if you're trying to hide it. Like, we're not professional actors. We're not Brad Pitt. Maybe that's not the reference I should go to. But yeah, you get what I mean. But anyway.
Oh, I was going to ask, a few of you mentioned your podcasts and websites. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to ask, I know that there are new podcasts that are starting up without a dedicated website. You know, they have a feed, they have social media, and you know, their blog or their news releases happen on their Tumblr or on their Facebook page. Mm-hmm. Do you think that a website is a necessary tool for a podcast that intends to, you know, build a wide audience, or is that now outdated?
Can I go first?
Sure, please.
Maybe it's because I'm old. I don't know. I still think you need you still need a website. And there's a lot of people I know where they are listening on the website itself, where they are pressing.
Yeah, we still get that too.
Yeah, especially people who are now. I mean, this is as technology keeps changing. For some people, it is easier on their iPad, or they think it's easier just to press while they're on that post or that page.
I mean, I think having it just makes you look real, and it can just be one page that says, "We are this podcast. Mm-hmm. Here are all the links to where stuff really is," and that's fine. But like, yeah. Name your podcast and get that, you know, jeffreygarnerspodcast.com. Register that.
I already registered that, actually. I'll sell it to you.
The other plus about having...
That's how you make money at podcasting.
The other plus of releasing it on a website is that you can also, if you have that kind of community, you can have a discussion section.
Yep.
So, you know, you can... because a lot of people will want to comment on that episode, and then other people sometimes comment back, depending on what you're doing. Like in the case of, and this has become like with my wife's podcast, Verity, which is six women who talk about Doctor Who, the comment section can get huge, you know, where people are like, I need to talk about all the things I felt while listening to your episode. And I don't know, has anyone ever done that thing where you start arguing with the podcast? And no, of course they can't hear you. The nice thing about a comment section is that's the point where you can do that. And you can say, yes, I agree, good point, or no, you're so wrong, you know nothing of science fiction.
And I think we should probably go to
questions,
this
yeah.
because we only got a few minutes. But super quick, the Audacity to Podcast has a whole episode, and I think it's titled, like, Should You Have a Website for Your Podcast? Just listen to that. It goes over all the reasons why he suggests you should have your own website, what you should do for your feeds. He has entire episodes just about feeds and how you should run them. The Skipping Fanny Show did not know about this podcast before we started, so there are many things that are going to be a pain in the butt later this year that we're going to have to fix. But yeah, I recommend listening to that. So
we do have a few minutes, and I think we can go to questions. Yes, sir.
Okay.
I went by too quick for me. You mentioned a podcast, a service that gives you the metrics. That sounds like it's kind of a key element to doing it right. What was the actual name?
Libsyn.
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 I should point out, after being with Libsyn for 8 years, we're probably moving to Spreaker this year because we do like occasionally going live. And Spreaker has a very nice live component, which allows the listener to actually listen live, or, you know, 5 second delay, internet live.
How is that spelled?
Yeah, it's speaker with an R after the P, Spreaker.
Yeah,
and they seem to have a lot of the cool metrics and stuff as well.
Nice.
Cool. Other questions?
Yeah, I heard someone say recently that they, I heard a podcaster say recently that they got the feedback that people aren't really interested in their guests so much as they want to hear, like, the regulars. Has that been your experience? I mean, you know, because when you know who you're listening to, you know you're going to have a good time every time. When you have, you know, a different person every week, it could be a hit or a miss. Has that been your experience, or do you feel like there's value in bringing new people on, or how do you balance that?
Well, this is actually something that came up, and we did a listener survey to ask folks about what they thought about various aspects of the show, figuring out all how they listen, yada yada. And one of the things that came up a lot is, particularly for author guests, since we do interviews, is a lot of people said that we don't listen to all of the interviews because it feels like very often you're having an author on as part of their PR push, which they've seen that author on 3 different podcasts. Why should I listen to this author this time? Even if our interviews are different, it doesn't matter because it's like I've seen Bob 6 times. So that's a big problem, who you're having on, whether or not it's perceived to be like part of a PR push. We didn't get a lot of feedback in terms of like whether or not they had a problem with guests. In fact, they wanted more discussions with authors. They just didn't want it to feel like we're just having people on because they got a book coming out and they got to sell it.
Yeah, I think there's in our case, I mean, I have 2 different kinds of guests. Like on the SF Squeakcast, we'd also often have a guest Squeakcaster. So they would come in and basically take the place of one of the regulars that week. And sometimes it worked great, and the chemistry was great. But, I mean, this is one of the things. It takes a while for a podcast to get chemistry. It takes a while for your regulars to get it when you're doing some kind of roundtable discussion kind of podcast. Sometimes it works both. So when you bring in a guest, you do have that problem that someone just, they may be very awkward on mic. They may just not have chemistry with the other people. Because it takes a while to learn not to step on people or over-talk or listening. You know, and some people, it's just not a good format for them. So I think that's always a roll of the dice. With the interview thing, I think it helped with that on the Uncanny podcast, we have we have a reader for the story, but then we have a professional, an interviewer who we've hired to interview someone at the end about the story and their work. And that's one of those where I think the key there, more than anything else, is having a good, prepared interviewer who knows what they're doing. I think that's one of those things, much like with anyone can just podcast and talk about stuff. No, not I mean, yeah, technically, yes, but it's not necessarily good. Same with an interview. Interviewing is its own skill set of, and it is about preparation and being able to pull things out of who you're interviewing correctly and get the best stuff. And, you know, that's one of those things where if this is a thing you're going to do, you have to do it, and you have to get the right person who knows that. You can't just kind of half-ass that one.
Yeah.
I think we might have time for just one more.
Oh. I pay most attention to like Icebox Radio Theater right around the bundled up announcements, right? You do the annual bundled
the
up.
The live show, yeah. You do a live festival in the early winter.
There are about 3 months out of the year when I remember that Joseph Scrimshaw has a podcast, which are the 3 months immediately after Convergence when I see on a schedule, oh, he's recording one of his episodes here. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering if you can talk to me about, besides the magic of a regular schedule for delivery, the magic of doing these kinds of special events that draw attention to a podcast.
They're the best.
Yes, do them.
Yes.
I think it gets back to just how crowded the field is, and how you know, we can connect to people here. People coming to the con, they're open to new ideas. Mm-hmm. We're here to sort of absorb things, and it's a very different dynamic than people going through their everyday lives where they listen on the bus or on mass transit going to work, or they listen working out. And they'll do that. That there's not a lot of difference between doing that in October as opposed to January. But you do a special event, and it's a way to kind of capture a little bit of that special event for a while. And there's also a promotional appeal to just doing something different.
Yeah. When we've done the live shows, I mean, because for Squeakcast, you do a big crowd, and same with Verity. I mean, Berlin, the energy that suddenly happens, and the fact that you now have a laugh track for your jokes. Yeah. Which means you can. I mean, well,
that's not actually called a laugh track.
It's called real laughter.
It's an audio.
You can have someone with a little thing.
No, that's actually my job in the audience.
You guys sound really realistic.
Yeah. Wait, can we add a laugh track for our person?
Yes.
But if that does give you, because one of the things, and you guys can talk about this more, when you do comedy, you know, oftentimes, you know, if you're doing it live, then you can feel the laugh. And no, okay, don't talk, laugh has gone down. Now next person talk. When you're doing a podcast, other than making each other laugh, you may not have that. You don't have the audience feedback.
Yeah, for sure. You know, there are great opportunities wherever you are. Festivals in the summertime, whatever kind of festival it is. The other one is a good one to follow up on is beverage distribution companies. People that bring beers to bars. Mm-hmm. We'll do events when they're launching a new brand or anything like that. They love having guest podcasts, especially if you're in some wheelhouse where you can talk about, you know, the alcohol of Game of Thrones or something like that. Mm-hmm. I want to wrap us up, but I want to give all our panelists a chance to plug themselves and plug whatever they've got going on for the rest of the con. So, Jeff?
Well, Icebox Radio invites you to visit our feed in the fall because we're completely redoing the podcast and it'll have a different focus. So don't listen till then, because if you can go back and listen to the old stuff, it's going to be totally new, the new stuff. And I'm in, what are we doing? Oh, we're doing a Foley. We're doing a Foley panel during Masquerade. Won't that be fun? 7 o'clock on Saturday. So I believe it's right back in this room.
Yep, we'll see you there.
What's your website?
Oh, website is iceboxradio.org. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. It's for you. You know, you got to make sure. I do, three podcasts, but the two big ones are The Skiffy and Fanny Show, which is at skiffyandfanny.com. Easy enough to find. We're also on Twitter at Skiffy and Fanny. The other one is Totally Pretentious, which is my movie podcast, which is at totallypretentious.com. I'm lucky that was still around. That's the easy way to find us. We're actually recording Skiffy and Fanny live tomorrow, if I recall correctly, at 11 o'clock in the morning.
It's in
this room. And it's the first time that all but one of us will be in the same state at the same time. So there will be six of us up here. Nice. And it's going to be insane. There may be fighting and biting. So, yeah.
My three podcasts are SF Squeakcast, which is rolling down, but there should be a new episode coming up soon. That's sfsqueakcast.com. Down and Safe, which is at downandsafe.com with Anne written out, and that is specifically about talking about Blake 7. So you have to be watching the show along with us. And then finally, uncannymagazine.com, which has our entire magazine of new fiction, poetry, nonfiction, and then the podcast.
So over at ourfaircity.com, we've actually just re-released our first season as a single 50-minute episode. Remastered and redone, so go check that out. It's a really easy way to get into the show for the first time, or if you've already heard us, you know, go check that out, see what's changed. At the con, two really big things. We are going to be, I believe, here or in this space somewhere on Saturday at 5 o'clock. We are going to be doing a recording session
for crowd sounds. So if you want to be killed by giant ants or pretend to be a mole person or anything like that, we would love to have you here. The more people we get, the better it's going to sound. So please come on down. We will be directing you to scream and laugh and cheer and stuff like that. And then on Sunday at 4 p.m., we are doing our live show on the main stage. So come check us out right before closing ceremonies. It's going to be a lot of fun. It's a 45-minute live audio drama. Garrison Keillor does 1984 is the pitch. So it's going to have live music, live Foley, a bunch of actors, and it should be a lot of fun.
I've got some Our Fair City bookmarks. Grab one of these before you go. It'll remind you to tune in, and thank you guys for coming.
If you would like to send us hate mail on this episode or any other topics we've covered, you can do so in a number of ways. You can send us an email.
SkiffyandFanty@gmail.com.
You can send us a tweet.
@SkiffyandFanty.
Leave a comment on the blog.
SkiffyandFanty.com.
Go to Google Plus.
Shawnee Jen.
And or Facebook.
The Skiffy and Fanty Show. Our intro music comes from Time Flux by Revolution Void. You can check them out at freemusicarchive.org.
Just another weak human afraid to face death.
I fart in your general direction.
France, different planet.
The Force will be with you. Always.
This is Ripley, last survivor of the Nostromo. Signing off.